Today on The Journey.
Here's one, Tunch. Stay away from angry people.
Anger breeds anger. How often have you got into this dialogue with someone you're mad at and that person's mad? You feed off each other's anger.
We all experience anger. Sometimes for good, sometimes in sin. And sometimes it hurts. It hurts others, it hurts us, and it hurts those we love. So today, Ron Moore and men's minister Tunch Ilkin share scriptural instruction for dealing with the harmful emotions that want to control us. Also, we're offering for a gift of any amount Ron's booklet titled A Biblical View of Sexuality. Its scriptural references and relevant instructions celebrate God's gift of sex and encourages its proper use. You can get yours when you call 724-731-2018. Your gift today will help further this ministry of developing followers of Jesus Christ. Now here's Ron to introduce his guest host for part two of a discussion they've titled, A Man and His Temptations, Anger on the Journey.
We're involved in a series focusing on the real issues of real men. And joining me for these is Tunch Ilkin, pastor of men's ministry at the Bible Chapel in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, sought after speaker. And Tunch, in the Old Testament, there are eight Hebrew words to describe the emotion of anger. There's one Hebrew word that means to foam at the mouth. There's another one.
I've done that. Yeah.
A storming rage.
I've done that.
There's one heat, fury. There's one word, sharon, that means to burn with anger. The most common one is the Hebrew word off, and it literally means nose, nostrils, or face. Mm-hmm. And it's the picture of what the word represents. And you think about that, a picture of flared nostrils, mm-hmm. of heavy breathing,
right.
hardened facial expressions. So anger is not only ugly on the outside, but it's ugly on the inside as well. And we've talked about some of these things. Envy, it comes across as envy. It never works alone. So you've got envy with it, or jealousy, or pride, or bitterness. Three types of anger. First, there's obviously expressed anger. Outbursts, slamming doors, fist pounding, things thrown, destructive. Proverbs 14:29 says, whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly. Mm-hmm. Tunch, I'll never forget sitting on the back deck with my son, and I can't even remember the situation. I think he had gotten a grade he shouldn't have gotten, or I didn't feel like he was trying hard enough in a sport. Very important at the time, I thought. And so I was very angry with him. I turned around, and we have a sliding door that goes into the house, and I grabbed the door and pulled it so hard that the door actually came out of the hinges. And I'm there standing, holding this 150-pound door. And I thought, okay, a quick-tempered man displays folly.
Right.
Whatever my son had done didn't equate to what I had just done.
Right.
So we all have to be careful.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've had to ask forgiveness from my children because, I've overreacted when disciplining them. And I think one of the greatest things someone once told me, actually, was a counselor, is that the key to effective discipline is to not discipline out of anger. And I remember one time I grabbed one of my sons and threw him against the wall, and I felt horrible. I mean, I just felt so horrible that I could heat up that quickly and react in that way. See, I never broke doors or anything because I knew I had to fix them.
like I said, it was folly. Genesis chapter 4, then the Lord said to Cain, why are you so angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door.
That is a great, great verse.
It desires to have you. You must rule over it. And anger is something that is crouching at our door. We have to rule over it.
Yeah, and the thing about anger, too, is you can get into a pattern of anger in your youth. And a lot of times anger, because of the way we're talking about it, it's used in sports and it's used in competition. When you are effective, we applaud Michael Jordan. We applaud Jerry West. We applauded guys that in there, Mean Joe Green and Dick Butkus. And the thing about it is that when you get the attaboys for that anger manifesting itself in sport and seeing success out of it, and then there's this physiological thing that happens in that kind of expressed rage it can get a hold of you if you allow it, and it can continue from the athletic field into a lifestyle, and now you have a real issue. Now you have a real problem, and now you start blowing up all these relationships because it becomes anger that is uncontrolled.
You know, I get a little cynical sometimes at the NFL because with all this stuff going on with the lawsuits and the head injury, and again, it's a violent game. What makes the top 10 plays of the week on ESPN when someone gets jacked up?
That's right. I laugh when Goodell finds a guy and then you walk into the stadium or you're seeing these great hits. I mean, it is the nature of the game.
So, to your point, expressed anger in childhood or whatever just carries on. So, as parents, we may need to get our kids counseling. We may need to go.
And we need to understand that if we're modeling anger, our children will also model anger.
Guess what? Yeah. Not only is there expressed anger, but also anger that's suppressed. We harbor it inside. Shows up jealousy, envy, bitterness, resentment. Jonah goes to the Ninevites. Didn't want to go. He didn't want to go because they were such a wicked people. They wallpapered their caves with skin. I mean, they were wicked people. And Jonah said, if I go and preach to them, you're going to show compassion. I don't want them saved. And God did show his compassion. Right. He went after he was swallowed by the fish. And Jonah 4:1, but to Jonah, this seemed very wrong that God showed his compassion. And he became angry. And we always think of Jonah as this great prophet. And certainly he was. But the last recorded words of Jonah, God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be so angry about the plant? And Jonah said, it is. I'm so angry, I wish I were dead. His last words.
Wow.
And he's not acting it out now, but the suppressed anger, I wish I were dead.
And here's the destructive nature of suppressed anger. Not to say one's better than the other, but with explosive anger, with an outburst of anger, the anger usually is gone. Suppressed anger smolders and it becomes bitter. I forget who said it, that bitterness is like drinking poison and hoping the guy that you are bitter towards dies.
Yeah.
And it can consume you. Holding on to that kind of anger, holding to that kind of bitterness can consume you to the point where you are both jailer and inmate at the same time.
Frederick Buechner writes this. He says, of all the seven deadly sins, anger is possibly the most fun. To lick your wounds, to smack your lips over grievances long past, to roll over your tongue at the prospect of bitter confrontation still yet to come, to savor to the last toothsome morsel both the pain you are given and the pain you are giving back, in many ways is a feast fit for a king. The chief drawback is that what you are wolfing down is yourself.
Right.
The skeleton at the feast is you.
You know, the interesting thing about that is that we talk about guys that deal with sexual fantasy. Mm-hmm. There is a ton of anger fantasy going on. Yeah. I mean, how many times have you, well, you probably haven't, you're a pastor and all, but how many times have you replayed or fantasized about the next time you see this guy, you are just going to blast him and you are going to do this. And when you've been wronged by someone, you entertain this fantasy about how you're going to get even. And he is right. It's like you lick your lips and you relish it. And a lot of times when I've done that, I've caught myself doing it and I'm going, I'm having a conversation with nobody. I am having this conversation in my brain. And sometimes even during prayer. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm praying and I'm having this conversation with a guy and my body chemistry changes, my temperature elevates. And I'm going, oh, you're such an idiot, Touch.
I've said I run Monday through Friday and I try to use it for a prayer time.
Right.
But there was a period of time when I felt like my son was getting shortchanged by a coach.
Right.
And every day I'm running, I'm having an argument with this guy. I'm trying to figure out how to put him down. And I'm thinking to myself, here I am, wasting all this energy. This guy's not thinking about me. He doesn't care about
me. He doesn't even know you're mad at him.
He doesn't even know I exist.
Or if he does, he doesn't care.
Suppressed anger. Transferred anger. Transferring anger to those around us. Now, sometimes we're angry, and so we want everyone else around us to be angry.
Right.
So sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's causing others to be angry, like our children. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord, Ephesians 6:4, Colossians 3:21. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they'll become discouraged. So sometimes we're angry. We want everyone else to be angry.
Right.
Sometimes we do things that embitter or exasperate or cause our children to be angry.
Right. Or sometimes we come home, we're mad at something else or somebody else, and we take it out on those that are around us. I hate when I've done that in the past. When I've been angry about something, I've come home and I've yelled at the kids and I've caught myself and I'm going, what are you yelling at them for? They didn't do it. And then I call my kids and I go, look, guys, I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know why I got mad at you. I had no business getting mad at you. But it's kind of funny how it causes you to transfer. It's something you don't normally think about until you catch yourself doing it.
And we've said this throughout, but just to say it straight out, you've mentioned it, I've mentioned it, and I know I did it. I can't count the number of times. Asking our kids forgiveness.
Right.
You know, if you're a dad out there and you're not doing that, man, just drop your pride and go to your kids and say, man, I just screwed up. I am so far from perfect. It's not even funny. And you just saw that. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry I took that out on you. I'm sorry I responded in a certain way.
You know, it reminds me of a story. I was coaching youth football and we had a kid that was always goofing around, always acting up. And this one time he and another kid were kind of wrestling. I really came down on the one kid. And he said, oh, but I didn't do anything. And I said something like, you've never do anything. You're always in the right. And I really yelled at him in front of the rest of the kids. And then as I was leaving, I kind of replayed what had just happened in my mind. As I was thinking about it, I was going, I really think he wasn't the one that was at fault. And that haunted me all night. And I couldn't wait till practice the next day. And I yelled it in front of everyone. So I felt that I had to apologize in front of everyone. And I said, I yelled at so-and-so yesterday. And buddy, I am sorry. I was wrong. You weren't messing up. Please forgive me. And I remember when I was getting ready to do that, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to admit I was wrong. Yeah. Number two, I was thinking, I wanted to take the easy way out, the coward's way out. Oh, he'll forget about it. And I'll just be nice to him. But that's not what the Lord had in mind. And my heart was really convicted to ask for his forgiveness in front of the entire team. And so I did that and I was done. I felt a lot better because I knew that I was in the wrong. But at the banquet that year, his father went up to Sharon, said one of the most impactful things that happened to his son that year was when I apologized to him. I would have never thought that. I would have just thought it was for me that I needed to apologize. So, you know, whether it's our children, whether it's our wives, whether it's our friends or neighbors, it's hard to ask forgiveness in a situation, especially when anger is at the root of how we've wronged people, but it has a tremendous impact.
You made a critical point there. If you've sinned in front of a group of people,
right,
or if you say something you shouldn't say to one person in a group, you need to apologize to the whole group. Just apologizing to that person, that's good. But other people don't see that.
Right.
And I'll never forget, growing up, my dad had said something to my mom, and I don't remember what he said, and had hurt her feelings or whatever. And he came back the next day and called us together and apologized in front of us. That made a huge impact on me. He just didn't go apologize to her, but he apologized to her in front of us and to us.
Yeah.
And it's critical stuff. You did that, and that had tremendous impact right on that kid.
And I've probably blown it and gotten angry and not apologized too. I've probably made that mistake.
Well, I've talked to several people that have not appreciated. You know, they still, I got a list of people you need to call.
Oh yeah, let me know. Call the congregation together. I'll just give a public apology.
Dealing with anger, four things here. First of all, submitting to the Spirit's control. Do not be drunk with wine, which leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit, Ephesians 5:18. Don't be controlled by an outward substance. Don't be controlled by an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, be controlled by the Spirit of God that lives within you. And again, that word filled is in a tense that means you keep doing it over and over and over. It's not right. Like, I want to be filled by the Spirit today and that's it, amen. It's, God, I need to be controlled in this situation. I know in this situation, I'm going to talk to someone today and I can feel myself getting worked up about it right now. Please control me. Don't let me lash out. Don't let me become angry. Control every aspect of my life.
And the more I'm saturated with the Word and the Spirit, as the Spirit of God lives in me, I've got to realize if I just say, well, I'm not going to be angry, well, that's not going to get it. It's through the Spirit. And to be willing to, you know, I had a brother one time say to me a long time ago during our football days, he said, you seem to think that anger is okay. And he said, it's not. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was very convicting because, as you point out, you know, we talked about it, played with anger. And because of the culture that I grew up in and the attaboys that I got out of it, the thought of anger being wrong was not in my way of thinking. And it took a brother to say, hey, Tunch, don't fool yourself. Your anger is just as bad as lusting after a woman. You tend to separate those things. And it was kind of like a wow moment. You know, you're right.
The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Guys are competitive. We've played basketball against each other. We played floor hockey where you just almost killed the guy behind the camera. Simon took a cheap shot. That was a cheap shot.
You know, you keep bringing that up
that was
to me.
A cheap shot.
You made it seem like I was trying to hurt him. I was trying to score a goal.
If we had timeout.
It was not timeout.
Simon was looking at the birds.
Please forgive me, Simon. I was not angry, and I was not trying to hurt you, but please please forgive me. Thanks, brother. He just gave me the thumbs up.
So you can be competitive.
Yeah, that's right.
And still be self-controlled.
Right.
And I think that's something we need to teach our kids. Mm-hmm. You can be competitive. You can leave it all on the field. You can give 100%. You can work hard. You can play hard. Mm-hmm. And still do it in a way that honors God.
Right.
That's important.
Yeah, it is important. You know what? There's a lot of great examples of it. I mean, Donnie Shell was a guy who loved the Lord, Steelers strong safety, human torpedo. He would hit anything. There was an intensity about him that scared opponents. But he had a love for Christ, and his intensity was really the way he displayed his love for Jesus. There was no anger. There was not malice. Even when he knocked out Earl Campbell with that shot where he broke two of his ribs, it was just playing physical football. Of course, he did pray over him as he stood over him. Giro, that looked like it hurt. I'm praying, bro.
So deal with anger. Submit to the Spirit's control. Deal with anger daily. This is something that we have to deal with on a daily basis. Ephesians 4, 26, 27. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. Yeah. Now, I used to think that literally meant don't let the sun go down while you're still angry. And if you have an issue with your wife, now Laura and I would have been up for days, never gone to sleep, right, dealing with the issue. But the point is here, don't allow anger to fester. Deal with it consistently. Here's one, Tunch. Stay away from angry people.
Yeah. Anger breeds anger. How often have you got into this dialogue with someone you're mad at, and that person's mad, and you're kind of, you know, then you feed off each other's anger. You know, quick story, we were getting ready to play with the Oilers after, you know, I shared earlier that there was cheap shots, and I'll never forget Wednesday, as we're preparing to play the Oilers the second time that season after the fights, and I'm ashamed to say, I'm the one that initiated, we're not going to take this, and everybody was, we're going to kill, you know, it got really heated in a meeting before Wednesday practice, wasn't even a game, and it was just funny how that little spark that I just threw out there, and there was this kind of unresolved anger in that meeting room, just turned into a forest fire. And that was for football, but that can also happen in everyday life if we allow it.
Did you guys beat them?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Right. I'm not going to tell you what I said.
Sometimes it.
Yeah.
It works better than other times.
We beat them in the playoffs. It was during the House of Pain. Gary Anderson kicks a field goal in overtime, and we end up winning in the wild card round. And they'd beat us twice in the regular season. That was during all those fights. And House of Pain, and I was standing over a couple of those guys going, House of Pain, baby, how bad does it hurt? So I'm ashamed to say I relished
fueled
that.
The fire.
I fueled the fire.
Proverbs 22, 24 through 25 says, do not make friends with a hot-tempered person. Do not associate with one who is easily angered, or you may learn their ways and get yourself ensnared. If you hang out with someone who is angry, you're going to get yourself ensnared in their anger and some of their antics maybe as well. An angry person stirs up conflict, and a hot-tempered person commits many sins. Proverbs 29, 22. Submit to the Spirit's control. Deal with your anger daily. Stay away from angry people. And stay with people who will hold you accountable to your anger.
Yeah. I think that was very evident in my life that a brother years ago really challenged me to get a hold of my anger. And for me, it wasn't that I couldn't control it. It was that I chose not to control it.
Yeah.
And as soon as it was pointed out to me, I realized that, wait a second, I was celebrating my own anger. And guys would make jokes of it. And so we would kind of laugh at it. It was during my football playing days. And I realized that I needed to keep it in check, and I needed to quit making light of it and quit celebrating it. I used to always say that inappropriate behavior would hide itself very well within the confines of the National Football League. But when you start realizing, and it starts affecting another part of your life, you've got to realize that that is something that you need to get in check.
All right. Again, submit to the Spirit's control. Deal with anger daily. Stay away from angry people. Surround yourself with people who are going to hold you accountable. And the last one is, you know, you may need to get some Christian counseling.
Right.
A lot of guys say, if I go to Christian counseling, then I got to admit I'm screwed up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all are screwed up. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. Proverbs 15:22. You need to get a good Christian counselor who will speak truth into you, a third party, mm-hmm. and get the help you need.
You know, it's funny, Ron, that we have no trouble going to a doctor if we've got an elevated heartbeat or high cholesterol or cancer. Why does such a stigma come with counseling? I'm a firm believer in counseling. I've been through it myself. I have counseled guys to go to counseling whenever I'm counseling a guy that I'm not equipped to deal with, but I know a guy who's really, really good. And I would not shy away from that for one second.
Such a story goes about Alexander when he was 20 years old, 336 BC. He took over the throne of Macedonia after his father Philip was assassinated. And within 2 years, he had embarked on this campaign of world conquest. He had 30,000 foot soldiers and 5,000 cavalrymen, a small group, but very efficient. And in his first engagement, he routed the Persians, despite being outnumbered 13-1 in a tough group. After an 8-year campaign, Alexander the Great, 28 years old, had conquered the known world, but he couldn't conquer his anger. And on one occasion, Cletus, a lifelong friend and a general in his army, insulted Alexander in front of the men. And he couldn't handle it. And he was enraged, and he hurled a spear at Cletus, intending just to scare him. But he struck Cletus, and he killed his lifelong friend. And they say that Alexander the Great conquered the world, couldn't conquer his anger, regretted that the rest of his life. So this God-given emotion of anger can be used for good. Should be used for good, but we have to control it if we're going to do the things that God has for us to do. When it controls us, anger becomes a spear-throwing emotion. When we allow God to use that passion, we can do some great things for Him. Well, Tunch, I really appreciate you joining us here. It's been a lot of fun.
It has been fun.
Going through the real issues for real men. And we just thank you so much for coming, and we're going to do this again. And we thank all those who are listening, and be sure to go to our website, ronmoore.org, and give us some feedback, get some resources. And as always, we want to thank you for joining us on the journey.
You know, it doesn't take a long look to see how sex-saturated our culture has become. Whether in television shows and movies, on billboards, or at the mall, one thing is certain. Our society doesn't hesitate to put sexuality and sexual topics right in front of us. But where is the church in this discussion? Far too often, Christians remain uncomfortably silent about sexuality. Parents are reluctant to talk to their kids about purity. Men and women, who desperately need accountability, keep their sexual struggles to themselves. And churches often avoid these difficult issues entirely. But because God created us and created sex as part of the human experience, we must talk about this vital topic. We need to know what God has to say about it and how we can apply those truths to our lives. To that end, Ron has written a thoughtful booklet called A Biblical View of Sexuality. It's yours for a gift of any amount when you visit ronmoore.org. Again, that web address is ronmoore.org. Or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join Ron next time as we walk together on The Journey.